If you want make a ginger, give me kokoro. My coach, I be your love. Anywhere I go, I come up with my bumma love. Oh, they do like bala.
If you want make a ginger, give me the kokoro. My coach, I be your love. Come make a show you my kokoro. No, they do like bala.
Make a love, make a rub, make a touch upon it. Make a rubber on it. Till I go lotion, I'ma rub upon it. Like fine wine, say you sweet when you whine it. Me, I know if you leave when you whine it. As long as we go there, I'm on amigo pay. Yeah, we go day nice. If we enter the place, I go day nice. I go fiki, 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 I go rewind. Say now me go be the DJ, I'm on feel nice. Say my party know they start to the daylight. Before you long go, they start, make you think twice. If not stop, you won't stop, say we day tight. I'm on my love, girl, say we live nice, yeah.
If you want make a ginger, give me kokoro. My coach, I be your love. Anywhere I go, I come up with my bum, love. Oh, they do like bala.
If you want make a ginger, give me kokoro. My coach, I be your love. Come make a show you my kokoro. No, they do like bala. Oh, yeah. I be making money, living reckless. I let it, man. You want me gone, Lolo, you get me on my white jello. If them dry, oh, if them dry, talk, then go sun. Then go down.
We go day nice. If we enter the place, I go day nice. I go fiki, 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 I go rewind. Say now me go be the DJ, I'm on feel nice. Yo. Say my party know they stop to the daylight. Before you run, go they stop, make you think twice. If not stop, you won't stop, say we day tight. I'm on my love, girl, say we live nice, yeah.
If you want me to ginger, give me kokoro. My coach, I be your love. Anywhere I go, I come up with my bum, love. Oh, they do like bala.
If you want me to ginger, give me kokoro. My coach, I be your love. Come make a show you my kokoro. No, they do like bala.
It's focus.
If you want me to ginger, give me the kokoro.
Hello and welcome along to Outside the Box. I'm your host, Benjamin Dalal, and as ever, I'm joined by the Steve McLaren to my Sir Alex Ferguson, the Pep Guardiola to my Mikel Arteta, Alex Duke. Making his first appearance on the live show today is massive Chelsea supporter, at least when the money started coming in, Isaac Jones. Today we'll be discussing our current thoughts on the English national team before dissecting the most recent Premier League results. Earlier this week, England put a convincing display against Republic of Ireland, winning 3-0, with Maguire, Sancho and Calvert-Lewin all getting in on the goals. Bukayo Saka, making his second appearance at the age of 19, won man of the match, operating in a left wing-back role that really caused Ireland problems, even earning the penalty for the third goal. My first question will go to you, Isaac. Do you reckon, realistically, and I know what you might say, given you support Chelsea, but do you reckon Bukayo Saka can challenge Ben Chilwell for the position next summer?
I think that Bukayo Saka is very talented. I think that he's definitely one of the better prospects that Arsenal has in their youth. But I think that, you know, Chilwell so far this season in the Premier League, he's been so good as a creative option as well, not only in attack, but he's solid defensively, tracking back. I think it's difficult to envision him getting dropped for Saka, especially just, I think, we have such a weak amount of options at left-back that, yeah, I don't see it at the moment. But maybe injuries, change of form, yeah, who knows.
What about you, Alex? What's your thoughts of Bukayo Saka?
Well, Benji, you and I have obviously had like long chats about Bukayo Saka. I think he's a really, really capable player. The versatility he's demonstrated already for a player so young, I think is really admirable. Obviously, he's played at left back. Naturally, he's a winger and he's slotted into a position and really performed, I'd say, more than what was initially expected of him, given his age. I think he's very gifted. I think he's very good on the ball. I agree with Isaac. I think ultimately Ben Chilwell has to start ahead of him just because of how good he's been at Chelsea this season. And he has that little bit more big game experience, obviously, like gained this reputation at Leicester for being one of the best left backs in the league. Extremely good going forward. And in a kind of Gareth Southgate system, he doesn't have the kind of defensive needs that are needed when he's playing at left back. So I think for me, I'd have Saka at second choice. I agree. I don't think we have enough quality left backs. We have all these brilliant right backs, obviously. We kind of wish a few more of them played at left back. Luke Shaw, I think if you follow Outside the Box regularly, people know my view on Luke Shaw. I don't think he's good enough personally. to be honest, beyond that, yeah, I think it's got to be Ben Chilwell top choice and Bukayo Saka right behind him.
Yeah, guys, yeah, I completely agree with your points. I think Ben Chilwell is just proving himself at Chelsea. He's been getting in on the goals, the assists. He's been a phenomenal signing, and I don't think realistically Bukayo Saka could bench him, but he provides good competition. I think Chilwell's defensive nature to his style really helps him. So, guys, I think we should get into the starting 11 because it's causing a lot of debates off recent, and I'm wondering, okay, let's just start at goalkeeper. I think I'm sure when I say this that you guys would probably put Dean Henderson in the squad right now. Isaac?
I'm actually going to be controversial. I'm sticking with Pickford. I think that despite the fact he has many errors to his game, I think he's still solid. You think the other keepers going into Euro 2020, you know, a competition that we have hopes to win. You know, we've got such a good squad. Only one of the keepers we have has enough experience really to have any chance. You just don't see us winning the Euros with Dean Henderson, whereas Pickford, you know, it was brilliant in the World Cup 2 years ago. And I think given a second chance, you know, back Southgate, he seems to think he's good enough still. So I'm going to stay with him, but I would have Dean Henderson as the backup, definitely.
That's certainly a fair point, Isaac, actually, because Pickford definitely comes into his own for England. Against Everton, he's capable of making amazing saves, then having one really, really bad moment, and that's why he's been questioned. What about you, Alex? What's your thoughts?
Well, I've got some very different thoughts on that, actually. I think Nick Pope has to start for me. I think his shot-stopping ability is unbelievable. I mean, if you look at the number of shots Burnley faced, I think he faced more shots than any other goalkeeper and was second in terms of clean sheets last season. And yes, he's not the prettiest goalkeeper to watch in the sense he doesn't play out from the back perhaps as well as a Dean Henderson does or a Jordan Pickford does. But I genuinely think Nick Pope has to be there for me because I think in a tournament you need the goalkeeper that's simply going to make the most saves that comes to penalty shootouts, that comes to in-game play. And I genuinely think as a goalkeeper, Nick Pope is the best. And I wouldn't even put, this is a very controversial opinion, right now, unless anything changes, I wouldn't have either Dean Henderson or Jordan Pickford in the Euro 2021 squad. I'm very much a fan of goalkeepers playing regularly, and I do agree with the quality of Dean Henderson, but if he's going to be Man United's backup all season, I think it's more justifiable to put in someone like Aaron Ramsdale, who's been starting and playing well at Sheffield United. And potentially even a very underrated goalkeeper who goes under the radar is Alex McCarthy at Southampton. I think people forget about him because he's a little bit older, perhaps. But Southampton face a high number of shots a game, as well as Burnley. They're not the best defensively, so Alex McCarthy is under a regular amount of pressure. And realistically, that's not going to happen. Realistically, Gareth Southgate has far too much loyalty to Jordan Pickford. Realistically, I think Dean Henderson will also get in the squad. But to be honest, that would be my opinion on it. I'd have Pope as my number one, and Ramsdale and McCarthy as the backups. I'll probably get scrutinised for that opinion a bit left field. Well, but yeah, there you go.
Well, I like the fact you've both disagreed with each other. I like healthy debate on Outside the Box. I personally, I don't know, I'm caught in two minds. I'd probably go with Dean Henderson. I know he's not getting the regular playing football at Manchester United with David De Gea sort of coming into his own this season and having like almost a second peak. I've got to say, yeah, I'd go for Dean Henderson, I think. It is controversial how you'd not even include Pickford and Henderson in the squad, but I respect it. On to the defence. We'd be going for a back four here, and Ben Chilwell undoubtedly probably at left back, as we've discussed already. Who are your centre backs? Isaac, I'll go to you first.
So I would pick Gomez and Keane. Might be a bit controversial, but I'm not a big fan of Maguire. I don't think he's proven in England, in the Prem. Maybe that's a bit biased, you know, in my opinion, but I think Gomez is obviously very solid. I mean, when he's injured at the moment, so this is a point that we might have to contest. But and then Keane, I just think he's proved himself a bit better. But I am realistic. I think Maguire probably gets in ahead of him, simply because he's got the leadership, I put air quotes there, quality. Mm. And he's very, you know, he's good from corners. He did score a good header, you know, in the game on Thursday. Mm-hmm. And he had a couple of chances like that. So, but it's Northern Ireland, you know, it's not the greatest team. So, yeah, I'll go with Gomez and Keane.
Yeah, exactly. I think there has been a lot of controversy around Maguire, but I think I've got to say, ever since he's come back from what happened in Greece, that ordeal, I think he's done really well, shown great mentality to get goals, and he's come back for Man United when people doubted him after Tottenham. So it's a difficult one. I sort of think he has a sort of unbenchable position in the England squad. But like, what would you go for, Alex? What would you go for?
It's a difficult one. I think on paper, Joe Gomez and Harry Maguire start. But, you know, I've watched Joe Gomez for 5 years as a Liverpool fan. I've seen him get injuries, admittedly not even as serious as this one, seemingly. And I've not seen him respond well to those injuries. He's generally taken 2 to 3 months to get back to his kind of best level. That happened at the start of last season and the season before. And, you know, if he's allegedly going to come back in potentially April, and the Euros are in, what, June, July, end of May? I'm not actually sure on the date, but I just don't know if he'll be, like, at his full capacity by the time of the summer. And I love Joe Gomez. I think on his day, he's our best centre-back. And this is the problem Gareth Southgate has. I think, realistically, we're not the best team defensively. I think, and this is why Gareth Southgate opts for a back three. He's been criticised for it a lot. I think a lot of England fans just want to see us utilise our attack as much as possible, given the quality we have there. If it was a back two, I would probably go for, considering Gomez's injury, I'd probably go for Maguire and potentially a Ben White or a Lewis Dunk, one of the Brighton guys. I just really think they're kind of forward-thinking, progressive, ball-playing defenders, really consistent as well, you know. Those two together have effectively transformed Brighton defensively. Their problem's gone from not being able to defend to not being able to score goals. They've actually got a real kind of structure there defensively. So it's a difficult one. Harry Maguire, I'd say, has to be in there. I think he's a divisive player, but I think the quality is there. He's just become overrated because of that £85 million price tag and the kind of weight of expectation that's on his shoulders because of that, and being Manchester United captain as well. I'd probably go for Harry Maguire and a Ben White, I'd say.
That's an interesting one. I certainly like your Gomez argument, because I remember when he last came back from the injuries for Liverpool, he hasn't been as effective, and he certainly struggled. But like, for now, I think our best two centre-backs are Maguire and Gomez. So I'd have to go for them. And if Gomez is back in April and he's not putting in the right performances for Liverpool, if he's put straight back into the squad, then maybe Southgate should consider going for a Ben White, a Michael Keane. This one, the next point of debate is the midfield, which is really tricky because people certainly have their favourites. Mine, I really am a big fan of Jack Grealish as the number 10. But I'm wondering whether you guys share the same opinions. Maybe you like Madison. But Isaac, who's your three-man midfield if you had to pick?
So I kind of like to go for the balance between kind of control, defense, and attack. And I actually, well, it's a bit of a toss-up for me between Mount and Grealish. But I think, yeah, in the number 10 role at the moment, Grealish has been so good. You know, Aston Villa looked really good in the league. You know, looked like maybe top six, definitely top 10 side. And I think he's at the heart of that. And I think his attacking options are pretty impressive. And then I'll go with Henderson as kind of the, you know, leader, the, you know, keeps control in the midfield. I think he speaks for himself, obviously, in the league last season. And then in the CDM, I'd actually go for Rice. I think he's been pretty good again. I think West Ham, I think, look good. And I think he's a big part of that as well. And I think that we have so many options. And none of them particularly stand out to me apart from Henderson. But yeah, like you say, it's very, very debatable, contested, for sure.
What about you, Alex?
Well, I mean, my ideal scenario is Gareth Southgate sacks and we bring in a manager who doesn't want to play six defensive-minded players or seven defensive-minded players a game. Realistically, I know we're talking about midfield three and stuff like that. Realistically, I don't see us playing the 4-3-3 that I think we're planning. I don't see that happening in a Gareth Southgate team because he's so reliant on this three at the back system and what I consider quite a constraining style of play. My ultimate objective would be to just try and fit our best attacking players in because that's how I see us winning a tournament. You know, you have to utilise Harry Kane. You have to utilise Jadon Sancho. You have to utilise Marcus Rashford for me as well. If there's a way to fit Raheem Sterling in the team as well, I think he's got to be in there. So I think the way that can actually fit all those players, it's a bit of a less popular formation, perhaps used by a couple of Premier League teams, but the 4-4-2 does fit those four players. So in terms of midfield, I think it's got to be a pretty kind of defensive-minded midfield, at least an organised one. I agree with Isaac in the sense that Jordan Henderson has to play. And for me, I'm beginning to like Declan Rice more and more. I think he was a little bit overrated in kind of the 18-19 season when he emerged. But then he's kind of demonstrated more qualities to his game. He can pass the ball more. He's not just a tackler. He's got good vision. He's clearly quite an intelligent player. Realistically, I'd probably go for those two in midfield. And then I like the likes of Calvin Phillips. He's had a couple of injuries this season. I don't think he's an England starter. I think Phil Foden has to be in the conversation. Ultimately, Phil Foden will be an England starter at some point in his career. I just don't know if he fits into kind of that Euro 2021 team. And Jack Grealish and Mason Mount have to be in the conversation too. But for me, they wouldn't necessarily start.
That's interesting because, yeah, our best four players are our attacking players for me at the end of the day. Kane, Sancho, Rashford and Sterling, they're all excellent and you'd hate to bench one of them because they add so much. And maybe if you play the 4-4-2 you're suggesting, then it would mean people like Grealish, players like Grealish, Madison, lose out and maybe we have to go for a more defensive two in Henderson and potentially Phil Foden in the conversation. But yeah, I guess we'll go into it for the sake of it. But and although you've dismantled my formation with your Southgate admission, but the three in attack, I've got to say probably Sterling, Kane, Sancho still. But Isaac, are you in agreement with that?
Yeah, definitely in agreement with that. I think Sterling on the left, you know, again, slightly inconsistent, but he's got so much, you know, he's starting in the Man City team that's, you know, rocking the Premier League every week. And then obviously Kane up front and Sancho on the right. He's a, you know, incredible talent. But yeah, like Duke mentioned, there's a difficulty in including Rashford because I think he is, especially the last two seasons, been, you know, phenomenal. This season he's been fantastic. In the Champions League, in the Premier League. So, yeah, maybe change at the formation. But I think having a front three and a three in midfield is the best way to go. And so, yeah, it's difficult. I think maybe Rashford, Sterling, but then, you know, Rashford doesn't prefer to play on the left. He prefers to be down the middle. So, yeah, it's difficult. But, yeah, Sterling, Kane, essentially, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's a dilemma we want to have and sort of don't want to have at the same time. because Rashford, as you said, Isaac, has been phenomenal. He's one of the only Manchester United players to not drop their levels, and I would really class him as world class right now. But Alex, for the sake of it, for the front three, I know you're more anti Raheem Sterling, let's say.
Well, I've watched Raheem Sterling and I've just never felt that he's properly delivered for England in the same capacity he's delivered for Manchester City. I do think that Marcus Rashford is a phenomenal talent. It doesn't necessarily mean I'm anti Raheem Sterling, because I've seen individual performances by Raheem Sterling which have been absolutely world class. And as I said earlier, if there's a way to bring both of them into the team, I think that's the way to do it. But you know, Marcus Rashford has been a consistent focal point, consistently excellent output. And you know, it's not just his goals and his assists. When you watch Man United play, if Marcus Rashford plays well, and if Man United play well, it's because of Marcus Rashford. I just think he's phenomenal, and you wonder what he'd be like in kind of a Guardiola City or a Klopp's Liverpool. Obviously that wouldn't happen because he's very loyal to Man United, but I just think that there's more natural talent in a Marcus Rashford than there is in a Raheem Sterling. But if I could fit both of them in, I would. If it was a three up front, I'd go Rashford, Kane, Sancho. I think Sancho has to start, out and out our best right winger. Harry Kane is the most talented English player, so he obviously has to play, but having the options of Ings and Calvert-Lewin's really healthy as well, they should definitely be in contention to come on and be kind of challenging Harry Kane. And another point I want to make about Jack Grealish is this whole debate, I think, is slightly flawed about him having to start, given the fact that he's not actually an attacking midfielder. People assume he has to play in that kind of number 10 role, but Jack Grealish, that's not what he does. Jack Grealish is a left winger who likes to cut inside, likes to get in those positions. But if you start him at number 10, I genuinely don't think he's that effective. So if you're comparing him as what he is, which is a left winger, to the likes of Raheem Sterling and Marcus Rashford, I don't think he starts.
That's interesting. Yeah, he certainly gave me nightmares when he was cutting in from the left wing last week and dismantling the Arsenal defence. So next one I'd like to get into, and Alex, you alluded to it earlier, but there have been many questions over Southgate's competence as a manager. People arguing for his dismissal, claiming his style is too negative, with the vast amounts of offensive players in this generation. Essentially, we should be scoring more goals, and we've been a bit negative. Yeah. So moreover, like, I'd say his achievement of getting to England to the World Cup semi-finals has been downplayed by these critics, with some arguing that England didn't really face any significant competition in the run-in, and going out to Croatia was a massive disappointment. Isaac, I'll first start with your thoughts. Do you think Southgate should stay or go? And as a second question, what do you think the minimum achievement we should expect Southgate to deliver us in Euro 2021?
I've got mixed opinions about Southgate, because while I may think that perhaps his style is a bit messy, I think, like you said, he can be quite negative and confused. And if this is happening in the friendlies, you know, we might have some really, really difficult sides. You know, there's a lot of good sides in Europe, might have a difficult group, or actually, I can't remember the group, but we might have, you know, difficult fixtures coming up in that. And if we get found out, then it's going to look very embarrassing. Because to answer your second question, I think the minimum is that we need to be reaching the semi-finals. You know, we're in the top four in Europe, I would say, especially with our squad. I mean, the depth of our squad as well. Like, there aren't really many excuses. And you have to wonder, it's the same question, actually, to a little plug to Chelsea. I would ask with Chelsea as well, you know, like, with all the players you have on the pitch, you know, do you not think that the results should be flying in, you know, it should be easy. So my only thing is that I know that they won't sack Southgate before the Euros, not on the climate we're in, you know, coronavirus. I just don't see it happening by any stretch of the imagination. So I back him for now, but I hope that his system is sorted out in time for the Euros, because it's a competition we really should be trying to gun for and win with the squad we have.
Absolutely, I second your thoughts, and also it's not realistic that he's going to get sacked, but it would be a grand disappointment for England not to make it into the latter stages of the competition. We have Croatia, Scotland and Czech Republic in our group, and you'd back us to win that, although Croatia can give us nightmares. Alex, I'll ask the same questions to you. You've alluded to your Southgate out. What's your thoughts?
It's a difficult one. And the question, there are a lot of questions about it. Has Gareth Southgate done anything as England manager to merit a sacking? Realistically, he hasn't, because we've qualified for every major tournament with ease. That's an expectation that he's fulfilled. We've played well in the Nations League, and at points we've overperformed in the Nations League. And obviously, the one example of a major tournament he's been in, 2018 World Cup, we hugely overperformed. And that team, it's odd, because with that team that was, I genuinely think, possibly one of the weakest England teams we've had this century, he massively overperformed, and he did really well to get the best out of certain players. What I think the problem is he's become too ingrained in his own system. I think he's too loyal to the players that got him to where, or got England to where they were in 2018. The fact is, I know Isaac said Jordan Pickford should be playing. I personally don't think he should, and I think a lot of people are quite critical of Jordan Pickford. I certainly don't think Kieran Trippier should be playing, given the strengths we have at right back. You know, I could name four or five right backs better than Kieran Trippier, and yet Kieran Trippier consistently gets in the team for unknown reasons. And this ongoing debate about Mason Mount, you know, I'm personally quite pro Mason Mount, but again, I think he's overplayed for England. So I think it's just those kind of tactical mistakes that he seems to make. And again, I think he's a manager that has the brakes on defensively. I don't think he utilises our attacking talent enough. And in a way, I think he overcomplicates the system. I don't think as an international manager, you have to be a particularly tactically aware, stylistic manager. I think you just have to be a really, really good motivator. You know, Luis Felipe Scolari was brought in as Brazil coach, again, on the premise that he was seen as one of the best motivators in the world. Obviously, that did not go well with the defeat to Germany in 2014. But the theory is that I genuinely think someone like an Eddie Howe, who has a positive style of play, is known for his man management and getting the best out of players who, you know, he did really well at Bournemouth because he got the best out of players who were Championship, League One level players. And with his attacking mindset, attacking style of football, I genuinely think he'd be a better appointment. But in terms of will Gareth Southgate get sacked? No, I don't think he will. But to be honest, I think serious question marks should be raised, because I genuinely don't think what he's doing at the moment is good enough.
I think, yeah, absolutely. I think the FA will look into it after the Euro 2021 result. And if it's not what they expected and we've got knocked out too early from the competition, I think there will be serious questions, and it could result in Southgate's firing. So he's got a lot to prove, and he certainly is playing with the handbrakes on with the amount of attacking players we have. But yeah, Isaac, Alex mentioned Eddie Howe as a potential replacement to Southgate when the time came. Who would you suggest as manager?
Well, I think that's a very difficult question, because I think we have lots of decent English managers at the moment, but none that stand out to me as being, you know, the next level. The problem is that I always think that because England has so many great managers, because our kind of football association is one of the most revered in the world, that we should try and promote English managers of the English, you know, team. So I think that's the way to go. Like, I think having foreign managers, it just doesn't feel like it's quite right. But again, I don't see any kind of viable replacements at the moment. I think Eddie Howe is good, but you know, he's never dealt with world class players at the level of Sancho and Kane and obviously Pickford. No, in all seriousness, I don't see. I mean, obviously Lampard, I don't think he's there. I don't think that Sean Dyche is there. I don't think that, you know, there really are many, many good options.
Chris Wilder, maybe?
Maybe, yeah, maybe. But again, a couple more seasons and proving, you know, he's in the second season syndrome. If he can keep Sheffield United up, then definitely, yeah. But, you know, again, nothing stands out to me as particularly obvious.
Yeah, I'm personally a supporter of the Arsene Wenger in group. I think we should bring in a foreign manager. I think Wenger knows the English game. I think if we could manage to tempt him out of his FIFA job, it could be one for the ages. But anyway, we're going to go to a quick song break, after which we'll be talking about the recent Premier League results, namely Chelsea and how they're doing, Man City, Liverpool. So watch out for Naughty Naughty, featuring Swarms, Simba and Noisy.
If you don't make money, then it don't make sense. Bare fake love, see I don't need friends. And I dropped up whip and I don't move by me. I know you want me, but you can't afford me. Ooh, girls around me, naughty naughty, don't come around me. If you're not vibing, if you're not dancing, girls around me, naughty naughty, don't come around me. If you're not vibing, if you're not dancing.
You say I love the way she move and wind her bumper. I don't even know your name, but what's your number? What the bumper, come wind pon the one car. And we come blow some at me with a summer planter. I tell her whiny baby, I love the way she do it whiny Shelly. Just grab a cup and maybe pour me Henny. And now she see a Starboy on the telly. Now she want me for key.
If you don't make money, then it don't make sense. Bare fake love, see I don't need friends. And I dropped up whip and I don't move by me. I know you want me, but you can't afford me. Ooh, girls around me, naughty naughty, don't come around me. If you're not vibing, if you're not dancing, girls around me, naughty naughty, don't come around me. If you're not vibing, if you're not dancing,
girls around me, all up in my space trying to arouse me. Say she never bugged in a Rari. She smiled at my knee, now she all up on me. Betting with a bumper. Say she wanna taste, tell her really want cup. I don't wanna stress, I don't wanna drama. I just wanna see you shake what you got from your mama. I said rotate. You say you a freak, are you gon' show it? If you really want it, you can hold it. Girl, I think I love you for the moment. For the moment,
If you don't make money, then it don't make sense. Bare fake love, see I don't need friends. And I dropped up whip and I don't move by me. I know you want me, but you can't afford me. Ooh, girls around me, naughty naughty, don't come around me. If you're not vibing, if you're not dancing, girls around me, naughty naughty, don't come around me. If you're not vibing, if you're not dancing,
girls around me, naughty naughty, papa me cocky, she come for Johnny, she got the Johnny. Girl touchy touchy, the big booty got me feeling touchy touchy. Me wanna feel, wanna squeeze touchy touchy. Me wanna know if it's real,
if it's real, if it's real.
If you don't make money and it don't make sense. Came with the Rari, now I left with a Benz. I can take your gal and I can take her friends. If she heard her name, cause my music trends. If this thing got it on her, put them at B, marijuana. The whip on the high road, baby, you can touch the sky all night long.
If you don't make money, then it don't make sense. Bare fake love, see, I don't need friends. And I dropped up whip and I don't move by me. I know you want me, but you can't afford me. Ooh, girls around me, naughty naughty, don't come around me. If you're not vibing, if you're not dancing,
URN
University
Radio
Nottingham.
So, welcome back along the second half of the show, where we would be talking about the recent Premier League fixtures that happened last week. So, we'll start by talking about Chelsea. As we know, you've got a massive Chelsea fan on the show today, and I'll say that Ben Chilwell, Thiago Silva, Kurt Zouma, Hakim Ziyech, they're all doing really well right now. Your defence isn't conceding as much, and you've had a really good run, which has seen you beat Burnley convincingly away 3-0, Sheffield United 4-1. Questions arose about Lampard's quality as manager when results were not going Chelsea's way at the start of the season. You were conceding a lot. West Brom 3-3. It was a mess at the start, but I think Lampard, it's fair to say, has weathered the storm as for now, and has started to figure out his best formation. Isaac, I've known you to be a supporter of Lampard. What have you made of it so far?
I think I always bet Lampard. I think he always holds something special to me, you know, because he was such a legend at Chelsea. I think managerially, he's got a way to go. I always gave him excuses last season, partly because of the transfer ban we had. And the quality of our players was low. I think, you know, I've always not been a fan of Kepa, of, you know, even Zuma. I mean, he's been great, you know, at the moment, like you said, but he wasn't that great before. You know, defensively, we just never looked convincing at all. Whereas now, you know, with Chilwell, Reece James coming into his own, it's been great. And I think those performances are what are keeping Lampard his job, essentially, because, you know, he has a chance now. He's got, you know, the 11 that we have is, I think, one of the best in the league. We've got some serious depth as well. You know, definitely, obviously, in the top three, I would say. And I think now what we need, you know, now the squad is fully fit. Now that he's kind of, you know, we've got all these good results behind us, some confidence, you know, going forward, I think is where we make a break and we see, you know, how our season's going to play out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I certainly think Chelsea have good hopes for this season. I've said this is not going to be a season where a team convincingly walks to a Premier League title like we've seen in the last few years. And I would definitely put Chelsea up in contention with Liverpool, with Man City. Man City, who are not really faring well at the moment, it's difficult to predict where they'll go. But Alex, what have you made of Chelsea so far?
Well, it's a bit worrying, isn't it? It's all sort of coming together, isn't it? I think, you know, I'm one who's been extremely critical of Kurt Zouma. I really thought he wasn't an able centre-back at all. Thought he was error-prone, not good enough in a lot of ways. But this whole dynamic between him and Thiago Silva seems superb, as with sort of Zouma as the kind of the ball-playing centre-back, Thiago Silva as kind of the stronger, like the centre-back that sits deeper and kind of commands in a deeper position. And apparently apparently they speak French to each other or something, and apparently the communication's good, which is really important. Obviously, N'Golo Kanté, French international in front of the two, so you know, that's really interesting. And to be honest, every Chelsea signing has delivered, pretty much. In a way, Kai Havertz has arguably had the quietest start. Obviously, he's got COVID-19 at the moment, so he's going to be out for a few more days. But Hakim Ziyech was absolutely unbelievable last week. I was of the opinion that, you know, if anyone was to drop out of that kind of Pulisic, Werner, Havertz, Ziyech front four, if anyone was interchangeable, I thought it would be Ziyech. I thought maybe he'd be switched more with the likes of Mason Mount. But he was absolutely phenomenal. And the, you know, his crossing, his creation, his speed, he's a really, really interesting player. It's coming together for Timo Werner too. I think that's almost gone under the radar. Obviously, he got a goal last week, and is just that superb blend of a really natural, strong finisher, as well as a striker who can sit back and get into those positions because of that speed. And yeah, it's a little bit worrying. Perhaps my only criticism might be that Frank Lampard is favouring Jorginho over Kovacic. Like, I mean, so far, that's kind of working. I do kind of think a Kante-Kovacic midfield. I mean, Isaac probably knows more than me on it, but I'd probably think a Kante-Kovacic midfield would be slightly more mobile. But it's worked so far, and I'm genuinely a bit worried about them.
Yeah, they're certainly looking the real deal right now. Timo Werner, I remember watching him in that game against Liverpool at the start of the season, and it was fair to say that Fabinho really pocketed him that day. But ever since then, I think he's understood more so the physicality of this league, and he's really starting to rack in the goals right now. So Chelsea's run-in over the next few games, Newcastle away, Tottenham and Leeds at home, followed by Everton and Wolves away. That is a difficult run-in. And do you think that, Isaac, that Lampard will have a lot to prove over these next few games? It's not at all to say that the recent run-in was quite easy and not as difficult for Chelsea. But what are you expecting from Chelsea over these next few games?
I think these are games that we really have to win to kind of prove that we're capable. And it's a point I actually wanted to make as well, is that, yeah, we've had, you know, we haven't had the easiest games, but they're games, again, that you expect us to win, you know, against Crystal Palace, Krasnodar. You know, Man United, our squad wasn't fully fit. So, you know, now that the squad is kind of fully together, I mean, I know Pulisic might be out again, and Havertz as well, COVID. I don't know when they'll come back, but you know, with these big games, it's time to start kind of, you know, asking the big question, making the result. I think, you know, Tottenham at home, we have to win. You know, it's something that, you know, Chelsea doesn't, we, you know, we don't lose at home. Well, we did obviously a couple of seasons ago, but we usually don't. You know, Newcastle away is a difficult game, but it's again something, you know, bottom half of the table team that I want to win against. Sevilla away in the Champions League, and, you know, Leeds is a tough game, but again at home, and they've looked shaky. So, you know, all games that with the team we have, you know, firing on all cylinders, I would hope to win all of them. And, you know, I wouldn't even take wins as concrete evidence to win the league, because, like, I agree with you, Dilal, that it's going to be an interesting one. I think it's going to go right down to the wire the whole time. But yeah, I think that these are results that Chelsea can rely on, and then maybe build something from there for the rest of the season.
Exactly, you can certainly build momentum from these games. Do you think, Alex, it will be a difficult test for Lampard over these next few games? What are you expecting?
I think Chelsea will be absolutely fine in those games. They're tough in theory. I think Newcastle away, they should win. Yes, Newcastle can be difficult to beat at St James's Park, but with Chelsea's attacking talent, I think they'll be absolutely fine. And, you know, Newcastle have got points, they've got wins, but obviously they got a point against Spurs. But if you watch the games, it's pretty undeserved. It's kind of they've fluked the point almost in a way. So I think Chelsea will be absolutely fine. Leeds at home, I'm sure Chelsea will win. I think you'll also beat Spurs at home. I think that will actually be a really fascinating game. But the fact it's at Stamford Bridge, I just think that you'll probably have the upper hand there. The only game I could potentially see you dropping some points might be Wolves away. Maybe Ancelotti might get something at Goodison Park. But then obviously Everton have had a little bit of a drop off recently. But it's so hard, obviously, predict what's going to happen this season, because you know, pretty much every team has beaten each other, every team's lost, every team's had, you know, moments of being absolutely phenomenal. And then, I mean, Aston Villa is a prime example of that, beating they beat someone 7-2, I can't remember who, and then obviously losing 3-0 to Leeds. So it's difficult, but I do back Chelsea. I think they have kind of garnered a form of consistency recently. And I think, yeah, the Chelsea Spurs game could be kind of an early title, not a title decider, because I don't think the title's going to be exclusively between Chelsea and Spurs, but I back both teams to be involved at least in the process, in the hunt for the league.
Yeah, regrettably, Spurs are part of this title race, could be dark horses, and I really hope when it comes to it that Chelsea put in a great shift in that game. Isaac, I'll ask you one final question on Chelsea. What is your best formation, and who starts for you in these like next weeks?
I believe that, okay, starting from the front, I would always say Werner. Obviously, I think you made a good point that he maybe had a slow start, but, you know, coming from the German league, I think that's completely understandable. I think Havertz is in that boat as well. And now they've got plenty. I mean, they get practically a goal and assist every other game. And they've got plenty of numbers coming under their belt. Werner at the front. And then I would say Pulisic on the left and Ziyech on the right, like you said, both quality players, two arguably of our best players, you know, on the wing, very creative attacking. In midfield, I would go for Havertz and Cam, and then probably, I think I would, well, Kovacic didn't play that well in the last game for us. I think maybe Frank's seen something that we're not, in terms of the reason why he's dropped, but he could play, it depending on who's in form, who's fit. I would say it's between Jorginho and Kante, and then maybe Kovacic on the bench in kind of the two deeper roles. Left back is obviously Chilwell. Right back for me is Reece James. I think, yeah, he's coming to his own this season. Mm-hmm. And then in the two centre-back roles, I would put Zouma and Silva. I think despite Silva's age, he's been very consistent. I think he's managing performances, fitness, completely fine. And then obviously in goalkeeper, it's Mendy, who has again been such an incredible signing for us. You know, it's real confidence at the back. So, yeah, I think all over the pitch there, we've got some solid options, and even better, we've got options in behind them as well.
Yeah, you certainly do. And this looks like it could be a really good season for Chelsea of recent, and we'll see how they go on in the next few games. One last topic for today I'd like to cover would be Man City, Liverpool. I got my prediction right, saying it would be 1-1, and won the predictions for Match Week 8, adding more misery to the life of Alex Duke. But, Man City really struggled in the opening part of the match, but gradually as the game went on, I'd say they'd figured out Liverpool's style and were arguably unlucky not to win the match, with Kevin De Bruyne missing a penalty and Liverpool missing a bit of their attacking prowess that they had in the first part of the match. Alex, what were your thoughts on this match? Were you disappointed to come away with the draw, or do you agree with my analysis?
No, I don't agree with your analysis now. I agree with most of it. I don't think City should have won that game at all. Yes, they got a penalty. Yes, they missed it. But realistically, I thought it was extremely evenly matched. Was I disappointed not come away with the win? I'm an ambitious fan. Liverpool are an ambitious club, but to take a point at the Etihad, I think was actually probably more of a victory for us than it was for them. I think both teams played well. It was one of those draws where I wouldn't say either side dominated. I agree with the fact that you said we dominated for the first 20 minutes or so. I mean, obviously we went to the front four with Diogo Jota and Firmino dropping back into number 10. So it was quite clear that our aim was to score goals. We weren't going to try and sit back and defend and hit on the counter. And for the first 30 minutes, you know, we dominated the ball. We dominated possession. Obviously, Mo Salah got the penalty. Sadio Mane got the penalty and Mo Salah scored. And from then on, City began to establish themselves more in the game. And for what was a really kind of end-to-end game, there weren't actually that many active chances. Jota had a good chance. It wasn't Jota's best game in a Liverpool shirt, but, you know, he's been in absolutely phenomenal form. Everyone has a slightly off day. My biggest concern from that game was probably Bobby Firmino. simply not having enough influence on the game for me. So that's a bit of a problem.
Mm. Yeah, Bobby has certainly drawn a lot of Liverpool fans to say that he should be on the bench, with Jota's recent performances being quite immense, and he's got a hat-trick against Atalanta, debut goal against Arsenal. He's really been phenomenal. Isaac, Man City have obviously struggled a lot recently. They've been averaging like one goal a game, and they seem to lack something in attack. They have a lot of injuries up top. Aguero and Jesus have been on the sidelines quite a bit, with Jesus coming back against Liverpool. What do you make of Man City? Do you think they'll weather this storm, or do you think their miseries in front of goal will continue?
I think maybe there's a slight stagnation in the team. You know, they've had Guardiola there since 40 year. They've won practically, I mean, they have nearly, what, you know, won everything in the English league. They haven't got the Champions League left, you know. Maybe, you know, it's difficult, especially, you know, that crowd. As I don't know, it's difficult to put a finger on what's lacking. You know, maybe Guardiola's, you know, finding it difficult to motivate the players the same way he was before. I think going forward, just based on their squads, based on what Guardiola kind of has got in the bag, they'll always, you know, you'd always back them maybe even to win the title. I think personally, oh no, it's a whole separate debate. I think it will be Liverpool in the long run that clinch the title. I think, you know, Chelsea and Man City and Tottenham and maybe Man United will be in around that conversation. But
where's Arsenal?
Arsenal perhaps eighth if they're lucky. But no, I think it's this season, you know, there's inconsistent results all over the place for every single team. You know, Duke already mentioned it, but I think that they're still a very, very strong side, and they've added immensely, especially defensively. You know, they look really good. The new signings have been really good. So I think I wouldn't sleep on them just yet, but I do think there are some problems in their team.
Yeah, they've certainly addressed their defence, as you said, and There just seems to be something lacking, maybe in midfield, an attack. Maybe the presence of David Silva was that crucial, and that's why they could be struggling. Last question I'd like to... Oh, Alex, do you want to say something?
I was just going to add that. I think Isaac, you and Isaac are absolutely right. I think somewhere where City have really strengthened is bringing in both Ruben Dias at centre-back. I think he's a terrific talent. Him and Laporte together, they're both amongst the best centre-backs in the world. So putting them together, I think they're really, really strong. And I think the other adjustment that Pep's made is playing Yao Cancelo at left-back. I know Cancelo is naturally a right-back, but I think he's a phenomenal player, to be honest. Probably other than De Bruyne, I was probably more scared of Yao Cancelo sort of bombing forward down the left-hand side than any other player when we played them at the Etihad last week. And I think he's really good on the ball, really positive-minded, a decent defender as well. And that's been a problem that Man City have had pretty much during the entirety of Pep Guardiola's reign, you know, with the exception of Benjamin Mendy occasionally having a good game and Zinchenko and Delf playing there and being okay. It's been an ongoing problem. What I do see, and Dalal, this is where I agree with your point. I do think that the loss of David Silva in the midfield has really had an effect on pretty much every other Man City midfielder, with the exception of Kevin De Bruyne. I look at the likes of Rodri, Ilkay Gundogan, players who'd be making sort of 20, 30, 40 passes a game, and they're barely on the ball. Like they don't have that degree of influence. And I think that kind of calming presence in the midfield that David Silva was for 10 years. You know, when you watch Manchester City, David Silva was always instrumental in the midfield, bringing the ball forward, keeping the ball, dribbling, retaining possession. And I just don't think they have that influence anymore. Yes, KDB is amazing. KDB is the best individual player in the league. But it does feel sometimes with Man City that they're a one-man team, certainly in the attacking phase.
Maybe it seems very simplistic to say this, but maybe they've been figured out as a team, and other teams didn't used to attack Man City, and it was more of the mentality, let's get this over and done with, and Man City would absolutely crucify them. But now it's more like we can really get something out of this, and Man City are not the strong side they were 2-3 years ago, but never doubt them, and they could still challenge for the title. One last question I'd like to ask. Obviously, it came out that Joe Gomez suffered a serious injury this week, a serious knee injury, and he's going to be in the sidelines until April. Alex, how do you think this affects the Liverpool defence? What do you want to see now happen? What does Jurgen Klopp select?
Well, it's one of those situations, isn't it? When Van Dijk got injured, I was like, you know, it's fine. We've got Joe Gomez, we've got Fabinho, Joel Matip's good. You know, we've got these young players. And Joe Gomez was going to be the focal point of our defence. He was going to be the guy to step up. Obviously, he played more with Virgil van Dijk than anyone else. So it's logical that he becomes the kind of commanding defender in our defence. And Joe Gomez gets injured. He gets two-footed by Gareth Southgate on England duty. So...
we don't condone these statements on our end.
No, obviously that didn't happen, but it's frustrating. I mean, it means we're in a position where we're reliant on Joel Matip increasingly. I do like Joel Matip. I think he's a really good player, but his injury record is simply not reliable enough. He's not really had a full season in a Liverpool shirt. There's always been periods every season where he's had injury. Fabinho is strong, and I do like Fabinho at centre back, but ideally I would have had Gomez and Matip as our centre backs, and Fabinho kind of sitting at the number six just in front of them. And I think it will be until January, it will be Matip and Fabinho as long as they're fit. And then I think Jurgen Klopp will just pursue. I mean, we've been linked with a couple of free agents. We've been linked with Ezequiel Garay, to be honest. I probably would take him just until the end of the season. He's 34, which isn't great, but he's, you know, an experienced centre-back, played for Zenit St. Petersburg, Argentina national team, Valencia. But ultimately, I think it will be Matip and Fabinho. And I think we'll do what we've done so far, really, with Matip's injury and Fabinho being out, have Reece Williams there in the Champions League, who I'm really interested in. And Nat Phillips potentially in the Premier League, who's more of that kind of traditional style defender, but clearly quite a steady influence. So it's not ideal, but, you know, I still have confidence in the team. It's just, you know, we're being thrown a lot of lemons and we're trying to make as much lemonade as possible.
Oh, Well, thank you for that brilliant analogy. Isaac, I'll quickly ask you this then. Do you think this will hinder Liverpool's title challenge?
I think it definitely will. I think, you know, you've got Trent Alexander-Arnold out as well. You know, who knows what's around the corner? You know, if Mane goes down next, if Salah goes down, I mean, I know he's already out for 2 weeks, going to miss the next Premier League and Champions League game. You know, these injuries really hurt them because at the end of the day, it is their kind of star men who, you know, get them the result. You know, it's not the club, it's the players. So I think it definitely does shake it up. It definitely shakes, you know, the original belief I had that, you know, Liverpool would walk it is hurt by this. But yeah, I think it's a serious problem for Liverpool, but still very open.
Yeah, exactly. So that brings today's show to an end. Thank you, Alex and Isaac, for coming on today's show. If you're interested in any more of our content, make sure to follow us on Outside the Box URN on Instagram, where you'll find the links to our upcoming podcasts and specials, including the most recent one with the highly revered Liverpool Football Club journalist James Pearce. Make sure to stay tuned, as we'll be back next week with Alex hosting the live show at 2 to 3 p.m. on URN1350.net. I've been your host.